Hi, everyone, and thanks for viewing this Fundraising Success 2012 Online Creative Summit Breakout Session, Icebreakers, Writing for Social Media and Blogs. We'd like to send out a special thanks to our session sponsor, Avectra, for helping make this session possible. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and the host for this session. Today, we've got Ephraim Gopin on hand to discuss the special skills it takes to write for engagement on social media. Ephraim is the community manager for fundraisingisfun.com, and yes, there's no G in there. I met Ephraim via Twitter, and personally, I think he's the king of engagement on Twitter, at least in the fundraising circles. Ephraim, we're so pleased to have you joining us today. Why don't you take it away?
Thanks very much, Margaret. Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking out the time from your busy schedules to listen to this session on writing for social media and blogs. Margaret will tell you, as she just did, that the thing I enjoy most is engaging others in conversation. I always enjoy interacting with others, whether one-on-one, working a room at an event, or on Twitter. So social media for me was a natural extension of what I had been doing as a fundraiser over the last decade. Two quick notes before I get started. If you have any questions or comments about the presentation, feel free to contact me on Twitter, or there's a contact form on my blog. Also on the blog, there will be a post with links that I'm going to be quoting during the presentation. You should go to those posts and you can learn a lot more. Let's get started. I'm going to break down this quick session into three parts. First, we're going to discuss a little bit about social media and some notes and rules. Second, the most important, especially from a writing aspect, is the research and strategy. And third, we'll discuss blogging, Facebook, and Twitter. So first, let's start with social media in general. Many of you are fundraisers out there, and you should take a look at this statistic. 0.4% of nonprofits raised $100,000-plus via Twitter or Facebook in 2010, and that about sums it up for me. Social media is not a fundraising tool. It's a means to an end, not the goal itself. On the other hand, 46% of U.S. millionaires are on Facebook, and social media gives you access to a worldwide audience. 75% of the world's millionaires are outside the U.S., and 70% of Twitter users are outside the U.S., so there is an audience worth targeting. Now, some of you listening may have a CEO who's demanded get started right away on social media so we can raise funds. And then he mentions, hey, didn't the Red Cross just raise $32 million via text messages and social media after the Haiti disaster? Well, the answer is yes, with one small caveat. Your organization, unfortunately, is not the Red Cross. The Red Cross is large, has thousands of donors, and works very hard at social media so that now they have hundreds of thousands of followers. Better tell your CEO, take a seat, take it easy, let's take things one step at a time. Some general notes about social media, which are important to know in advance what it is, what it isn't. And since knowing is half the battle, I'm going to give you some ideas now about social media that will include writing tips and posting. It's a top 10 about social media in no particular order. So I wrote a blog post a while ago where I discussed how I decide who to follow on Twitter, and I asked for feedback from a couple of nonprofit consultants. One of them, Mark Pittman, the fundraising coach, he commented, "People who only broadcast soon become boring." So in essence, you are not Walter Cronkite, a broadcaster. What you are is Ann Landers, dear Ann Landers, a relationship builder. When you write on social media, less me, 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 and a lot more you, you, you. Number two, I would rather have 100 followers who repost, share, and retweet my content than 10,000 followers who never answer my questions and don't engage in conversation. Or in other words, when it comes to followers, quality over quantity. And this is important when writing. You always have to be thinking of ways to engage and further the conversation and not stop it dead in its tracks. Number three is ROE, which is return on engagement. You engage new people who never heard of you. You build brand awareness. You use it to strengthen and expand prominent programs. You recruit volunteers. And maybe down the road, you even launch a campaign. So when you think about it, your writing style and content look totally different when you're writing a fundraising style letter than what you would do here on social media. Nonprofit marketing and social media strategist Deborah Askenazy asked Deborah on Twitter. She says, you engage in order to create trust, which moves people to action. And the fact is, you'll be engaged so often, you probably should have prepared to get married. Number four, social media is not free. The platforms themselves are free, but there's a cost in man hours, and it all depends on the person managing your social media presence. If it's a paid worker, obviously you have to pay them. And on the other hand, and what I'm about to say may sound a little controversial, and this is a wonderful group of people here on the slide, but I am not a big fan of using volunteers to do an organization's social media. They don't always have the time to invest in properly engaging your community, and they don't always have set hours, which means there's a conversation going on about your organization, and you're not a part of it. I know we work with nonprofits. I know we like getting things for free, but free doesn't always mean free. I think it's better to pay somebody even just to do the minimal amount of work. Number six, you do not have to be anywhere. You can see there are a lot of social media outlets. Figure out which ones work for your organization and stick to those and be good at those first. The next one is a rule that I really try to hold to, which is no religion or politics or personal attacks on social media. I know there are sometimes reasons to discuss political views or religious beliefs, but that's how arguments get started, and you can potentially lose followers. If there's a way to say it without angering people, yes, you can say it, and a blog is a great place to do that, and I'll discuss that a bit later when I get to blogging. So as far as personal attacks, let's get to the first edition in this session of Oopsie, Failures We Can Learn From. So you can see on the left side the following example. Steve Norris, who's an advisor to the mayor of London in England, said, the National Theatre of London should have a compulsory demolition order. Instead of arguing the point, the National Theatre tweeted out, well, Steve Norris is clearly a giant, four-letter word, which I won't repeat because this is a family-friendly session. So it was bad enough that the official Twitter account attacked somebody personally, but then they compounded their mistake. If you see the other tweet right next to it, they made it even worse by saying that their account had been hacked and that they deleted the tweet. So there are two things to learn here. One, never attack somebody personally. Nothing good can come of it because there was a big firestorm about what they said about Steve Norris. And the second thing is, which is number eight, leave negative comments. I know it doesn't look good in your timeline or on your Facebook page. Leave it. People screen capture those, and even if you delete it, somebody has a copy of it. Instead, fess up to the mistake. People on social media are tolerant, forgiving, but not if you're going to cover it up. And you'll see that there's a link here to what happened very recently with Boner's BBQ. A woman went to a restaurant, had an unpleasant experience. She put a negative comment on the restaurant's Facebook page. The restaurant responded with extremely negative comments about the woman, and it created an absolute PR disaster for the restaurant. The next thing is, be fearless, be creative. Yes, it's good to be careful, but have a strategy, start trying things out, see what works and what doesn't, and, you know, eventually you'll find your groove. And the last thing is, your executive staff has to be on board. If they don't understand the social media strategy, if they don't understand the need to devote time and thought to what's being done, I wouldn't necessarily recommend getting on social media. It's part and parcel of the organization's overall PR, marketing, and fundraising strategy. Upper staff need to sign off on it before you dive in. All right, so now we've looked at social media in general. Let's move on to what I consider the most critical stage, which is research and strategy. So my wife and I love to cook. In fact, we estimate we tried in excess of 500 to 600 recipes since we've been married. However, we always go in with a recipe. I'm not a big fan of just diving into the deep end and figuring things out. In order to be successful at social media, you need a roadmap. I'm going to spend the next few minutes discussing research and strategy, and that'll help you plan your writing and how you're going to engage people on social media. So the first stage is research, and here are the most two important words, CI, competitive intelligence. Businesses use it to see what their competitors are up to. Everything is online and open to the public. It's very easy to do. And your nonprofit should be no different. If there's an organization in your area that's doing similar work to you, check them out. Look at their website, look at their programs, know what foundations they receive funds from, and then go look at their social media. What platforms are they on? Who follows them? How do they engage their community? Do they bother to engage their community? You can learn from everyone else's best and worst practices. At the same time, you can do the same search for similar organizations throughout North America. And I would also say, go look at other blogs. Look at the topics they write about. Take note of the writing style. See how you can differentiate yourself from others. I know this is charity. I know we're not in this to compete, but the fact is there are so many charities out there and the donation pie isn't getting bigger. You want your piece of the action. You better figure out how to stand out. So let's take the three platforms and let's look at them quickly. So blogging, you want to look at the design your competitors are using. You want to see what they write about. Do they only write about themselves? Do they write about the issues they deal with? Is there one person blogging or are there different people blogging? Do they write long essays or short to the point blog posts? Answers to those questions are very important so you can determine the type of blog you want to write, the writing style, and the content. And we can also look at Twitter and Facebook. When you look at Twitter, see who organizations follow and who follows them. Read through some of the conversations they have with other people and see how they engage and how they encourage others to respond to their tweets. The same goes for Facebook. Take a look at what the organization posts and whether it encourages their community to participate or not. Not to worry, it's all perfectly legit. It's all there in the public domain on the internet. It'll help you determine which direction you want to go. You'll see some good and bad practices when it comes to engagement, and that'll give you ideas of what to post, how to post it, and then how to stand out from other organizations. Once you've completed your research, the next thing is strategy, or as my friend Zana Rama says, to avoid burnout, you need to set clear goals in advance. So what we want to look at very quickly is the W questions, and we'll start with who. And there are two parts here, who to engage and who's going to do the engaging. Your organization first has to narrow down, at least at the outset, who they want to engage on social media, foundations, local businesses, volunteers, current donors, potential donors. Knowing who you want to engage will help you write in what you post because your communication to current donors, let's say, is different than if you're going to communicate with potential donors. If that goes for a fundraising letter, the same goes for social media. So the who is posting is also a very big deal, and now we go to another edition of, oopsie, failures we can learn from. If you take a look at the slide here, you'll see what happened to internet marketer Mark Davidson. One of his Twitter writers was not very happy at being fired. He still had access to Mark's account. He had the password, and he started tweeting out to Mark's 50,000 followers. Now, at the time this happened, there was a discussion on the internet as to whether this was real or actually a stunt by Mark Davidson himself. But in either case, you've got to bring on board a trustworthy person with good writing skills, I might add, to tweet, post on Facebook, and blog for your organization. Next, we'll look at the what. What are the short and long-term goals? What do you want to get out of social media? How many blog posts a week? How many tweets and Facebook status updates a week? How many foundations and businesses are you going to try to contact and connect with each month? Once you have those goals, you can map out a viable strategy. And I mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to say it again. A goal should not be to get X amount of followers. You have no way to control that. You can control the list of people you want to connect with. Go out, engage them. Where? Very simply, there are a lot of different platforms. You can't be everywhere. The rule is at the outset, 2 hours per week per platform. So if you're going to be writing a blog and on Facebook and Twitter, dedicate at least 6 hours per week to properly engage, write, and discuss with others what your organization does, etc. The when. You got to know who's on and when they're on because you want to engage people. That's by trial and error. You see what times your followers are on, when they're engaging, and that allows you to decide when to post a status update to Facebook or when to tweet something out. The why. Why are you getting on social media in the first place? Again, we've discussed you're not the Red Cross, but on the other hand, there are thousands of organizations out there on social media. Why should you join? Because there's a conversation going on, and you're not there. So if you figure out a strategy, you'll be great and ready to go for posting and engaging everybody else. And finally, the last W question is the how, and this has a lot of components. How does social media help your mission? How does it fit into the overall PR, marketing, and fundraising strategy? How do you measure engagement, which is a whole different session altogether, but it's critical? And finally, how are you going to help your community of followers? Let's take the example of if you run an alumni association. How do you use social media to help your followers? For instance, you have alumni who work as lawyers, doctors, whatever it is in business. Can they post when there are job openings in their companies to allow your followers to have first crack at those jobs? Or will they at least pass around or pass up the chain fellow alumni's resumes? How you help your community is critical to the success or failure of your strategy. So now you've mapped out a strategy. The last thing to do is create a clear set of guidelines and rules. What you can and can't post, how to respond to negative comments politely and respectfully, who has final say on posting something which might be controversial, types of contests and promotions that are okay and which aren't, and a lot more. So let's take this whole thing together, and let's end the section with another edition of Oopsie, Failures We Can Learn From, but actually it has a good ending. This comes from our good friends at the Red Cross. So Gloria Wang from the Red Cross, she ran the American Red Cross official Twitter account, and a year ago she tweeted the following. Ryan found two more four-bottle packs of Dogfish Head's Midas Touch beer. When we drink, we do it right. Hashtag getting slizzard, which I can only assume means getting slightly drunk. Gloria meant to tweet that from her personal account, but instead it reached the Red Cross's 500,000 followers. The Red Cross is a serious organization, and a tweet like this is not so great for PR. However, Wendy Harmon, who's the Red Cross social media director, crafted the perfect response when she tweeted, "We deleted the rogue tweet, but rest assured the Red Cross is sober and we've confiscated the keys." Now that's how you handle a delicate situation. No need to fire anyone, no need to yell at anyone. Fess up to the mistake, poke a little fun at the situation, and let people know you're on top of things. That's why research, strategy, and guidelines are so important. And by the way, the response that she wrote is a great example for writing on Twitter. It's perfect, dead on. If you want a little bit more about strategy, Deborah Askenazy recently wrote a wonderful post with great insights about it, and you can click there or you can go to the post and you can learn more. So now we're going to get into the actual blogging, Facebook, and Twitter, and we're going to start with blogging. The first thing you got to know is something my father told me a long time ago about public speaking. You won't hit a home run every time. A baseball player who hits .333 is going to the Hall of Fame. And the same applies with speeches and writing. You don't need to hit a home run every time. If one of every three blog posts is a hit, you're doing just fine. Let me run through a couple of general tips for blogging, and then we're going to get to some writing tips. You want to make sure you have a blog calendar so you know when you're going to be uploading a new blog post. You want to know how often you're going to be writing, 1, 2, 3 times a week, depending on who's doing it and how much time they have. You want to make sure that you read religiously. Know what's going on out there. Use Google, use RSS, use Google Alerts to keep on top of the latest news in your sector or your area of expertise, and so you can read other nonprofit bloggers, know what's going on. Once you read, you can see what experts are saying, and then you can quote them in your blog, which is always a good thing to do. And that leads me to curating. Curate content using platforms, social media platforms like Delicious or Scoop It, and you will always have ready available articles about what you're blogging about so you can quote and you can link to it. And, of course, many times people do link back. Guest posts is important. You should guest post if you can on other people's posts. And every now and then, have a guest post on your blog. They both drive traffic to the blog and to your website. You want to blog about timely subjects. For those of you who are following the recent happenings with Komen and Planned Parenthood, there were a ton of blog posts out there about this that started literally the day Komen came out and said they were separating from Planned Parenthood, and continuing till today, weeks later, there was a ton there, and there were some very, very good blog posts, and didn't necessarily take the mainstream opinion, but they were very timely, and people were reading them. Another way to get people to read your blog is to tell a story. People love a good inspirational story, and I'm sure your organization has plenty of them, especially first-person stories. I always find those hit home the best. If it's told from the viewpoint of a constituent, a donor, a volunteer, or a staff member, a well-told story makes for an excellent read. An Another thing to consider is to have different bloggers from within the organization. If you look at the blog that the Mercy Corps writes, on the right side, they have different writers who've written recently. Each comes with a fresh perspective, a viewpoint, and a different tale. People get attached to specific bloggers and writers, but diversity allows you to appeal to a much wider audience. And finally, make sure your social media logos are prominently displayed on your blog, because if I liked your blog, I might go follow you on Twitter or like you on Facebook. So when I was preparing this presentation, I asked a couple of nonprofit professionals to give me their writing tips for blogging, and I want to share them with you because there's some really good stuff here. So John Hayden from Boston writes an excellent blog about social media, especially Facebook marketing. He says, shoot for done, not perfect. Get the blog out the door, it gets 100% results. When it's unpublished, you get 0%. Leslie Pinder, who works for Missing People in England, said, write first, edit later. And then she told me further, I work better if I pick my subject and then I write, but then I always go back and edit. John Lepp, who works for Agents of Good out of Toronto, gave three words, write awesome content, and yes, it's definitely not as easy as it sounds, but if you want to get readers, that's what you got to be producing on your blog. Again, you can use the one out of three rule, but produce awesome content. Erica Mills out of Seattle, who's a great nonprofit smarty, runs Klaxon on marketing, she gave me 2 points, very simple. 1 point per post, and people skim, they don't read, and I just want to add on that. Tests show that people scan web pages in an F fashion, meaning they see the headlines and they scan down the left side. So if you want to catch their attention, bold your headlines for each new point, and then people can find what interests them really easy. Also, keep your paragraphs short. People have a Twitter attention span today. If you take a look at the New York Times or other newspapers, they keep their paragraphs short. Mark Phillips from England also, he said to me, make sure you write regularly about a specific area or interest of work. He did say, be contentious. Don't worry about irritating or annoying people. If you think things aren't as they should be, say it. Now, we discussed this, you know, I mentioned this earlier. Just be careful as to how you say it, but Mark does say, be contentious. Don't worry about making people upset at what you write. And the last thing is, he says, improve on other ideas. There are a lot of ideas out there. Make sure that if you're going to post something, make sure that you improve on the idea. A friend of mine here in Israel, Jonathan Ross, he shared a couple of tips. First of all, the name of the blog has to have significance or relevance to who you are or what you're writing about. He does say use fresh content because that draws new readers and, important, it helps your search rankings. And finally, he says, get your point across at the start of the article. You are not writing war and peace each time you do a blog post. Another friend here, Liz Cohen, who works for Rapid Fire Consulting, she emailed me a wonderful piece of wisdom, and you can see by her picture, she's a lot of fun. She said, don't fret over the details in the beginning because you'll be completely frozen. Run with it. You'll start noticing your own patterns, and it's best to be yourself, and your blog will succeed. Finally, my buddy Zan from Seattle, know the audience. Who's your audience? What do they care about? Who do they listen to? Focus your blog on them and not what you want to say to them. That's great advice from a lot of experts. And if you look, or if you're listening, you'll hear that I just quoted experts from Toronto, Boston, England, Israel, and Seattle. And that's exactly what social media is, a chance to connect with people around the world. Everybody has their own style of writing. What applies to one doesn't apply to you, but the headline is the most important thing. Make sure it's catchy, humorous, provocative. People see a lot of links each day. Make sure you stand out with that headline. I want to touch on Facebook for just a second. Many of you are already there. Facebook is expected to hit 1 billion users in August of 2012. This is in about half a year. But writing and engaging on a personal page is different than a business page. On Facebook, yes, you can be a bit more of a broadcaster, and you can share your organization's accomplishments with your community, but up to a point. When it comes to your fans, make sure you thank them when they share your posts on their personal pages. Sometimes if you want, share posts from your volunteers or your staff or your donors on your organizational page. It adds some nice content and flavor and color to your page. Writing on Facebook, just like on your personal page, keep it short. Blogs are where you want to write a full piece. A status update on Facebook should be to the point, but again, use it to elicit comments. For example, and you can see this page here, was done by a university in Nevada. And this is, they created a page of an alumni, of an alumnus from 1910, and they used it to engage current students and alumni. So first of all, that means the writing on the page had to be era sensitive and really creative, but that's such a great way to engage. On the other hand, a very quick example of, oopsie, failures we can learn from, Timothy's Coffee in Toronto. They said on their Facebook page, like us and you'll get free coffee. Well, after the first 3 days, guess what? They had no more coffee to give out. So what did they do? They said it was a first-come, first-served promotion. If you didn't like us, too bad you don't get coffee. Which, of course, you can imagine, set off a firestorm of negative comments and bad PR for them. So be very careful as to the promotions that you're going to run on Facebook. Finally, we get to, as Margaret mentioned, Twitter, my favorite platform of them all. Twitter is all about engagement, being kind, and rapid response. Here's what it isn't. Do not use Twitter to constantly broadcast about your organization. Don't use it to constantly ask people to like you on Facebook. Don't use it to tweet out requests for donations, or all you do is tweet out where you are in the world via Foursquare. If you're using it for those, very few people are going to follow you. Here's what you can do. Make yourself an expert in a specific area. If you work in the area of digital gap, which is like the gap between those who have access to technology and those who don't, follow organizations around the world and locally who deal with it. Discuss the social implications of the digital gap. Start collaborating with other people. People will come to see you as an expert in the field, and then you will get lots of followers, and you'll become known on Twitter, and people will want to engage with you. By the way, that was a personal example of something I did for an organization, which worked because in the end, I found organizations in 16 different countries to collaborate on projects with. Before you start tweeting, though, and I just mentioned this, go follow in your area local foundations, nonprofits, media people is good to follow in your local area, and people on Twitter usually follow back if, you know, they have similar interests to you. Very important is the 60-30-10 rule. 60% of what you tweet should be retweets and content that others have tweeted, 30% conversation with other people, and 10% about your organization. That's it. Don't worry, though. You start to build a following. That 10% starts to get retweeted by others, allowing their followers to learn about your organization. They'll click on your links to blog posts and a lot more. Another quick way to gain followers, if you're on Twitter, join Twitter chats that are related to nonprofits. These are three of my favorite ones. Here are the times and the hashtags for those. Join them. Engage in conversation with people. I always find that that gets followers, and you engage people from all over the world on the issues that are facing nonprofits. And it's a good way for you to get your name out there, that you're on Twitter and people want to follow you. And, you know, on Twitter, one of the things you want to do is to be creative. Yes, you only have 140 characters, but creativity is where it's at. You can see here, I wrote a blog post, and I wanted to tweet it out. I think there are six here. I tweeted it out with about nine different headlines. In the end, people retweeted it, and with different headlines, which means what appealed to one person didn't necessarily appeal to someone else. One of my favorite ways to be engaged is to show people your personality. I love to tweet out about the 80s and anything that's related to music and pop culture from the 80s. Take a look at this picture. It was tweeted to me by one of my followers. She's a grant writing consultant, Susan Perry. Her Twitter handle is WinGrants. I tweeted out random lyrics to a Peter Gabriel song from the 80s. She tweeted me back this picture, and that's not just regular engagement. She took it up a notch. She went and found the picture to tweet me, and then that caused an engagement for us, and we sat there and we had a conversation about the picture, the movie, etc. Or the time that I simply just tweeted out about socks being a status symbol in Silicon Valley, and I started having conversations with people who either knit socks or their husbands wear the most outrageous socks. You never know what's going to cause you to have a conversation with somebody. Here's an example of what to do when you're writing your Twitter bio and you have a picture. You have two choices. Use the logo of your organization and state in the bio who you are that's tweeting, or the other choice is what Good Threads have done. They put Brandon's picture here, but they wrote about the organization in their bio. Finally, the last oopsie, failures we can learn from, and with this I'm pretty much going to wrap it up. Here's what Bing did. They sent out a tweet, how you can support Japan. For every retweet, Bing will give $1 to Japan quake victims up to $100,000. Sounds like a great thing. It's a wonderful thing that they were doing for the tsunami victims in Japan. It brought a flood of negative responses. First, people were upset that they had to retweet Bing and give them, more public, more marketing and more opportunities to get their name out there. Other people were upset that they were only giving $100,000. The worst is that a comedian by the name of Michael Ian Black tweeted, "Hey, Bing, stop using a tragedy as a marketing op." You know that was why that was a big deal? Michael Ian Black has 1.6 million followers on Twitter. Bing quickly realized the PR disaster, and they tweeted out that the tweet was negatively perceived. The intent was to provide an easy way for people to help the people of Japan. We have donated $100,000. The tweets can be short, but they carry a punch. Be careful. Finally, Twitter is a conversation tool. Don't tweet something out if you're not going to be there to answer other people. A lot of people answer tweets within the first 5 minutes. If you're not there, the conversation dies, and you've lost an opportunity to converse and engage somebody. So basically, in the end, engage, engage, engage. Write to be able to engage people and converse with them. And in the end, just get married.
Thank you so much, Ephraim. Well, is your head spinning? Did I tell you he was terrific or what? But I want to thank everyone for being here on behalf of Fundraising Success and Avectra. Thank you for attending the 2012 Online Creative Summit and for opting to view this breakout session. Also, we encourage you to click on the gear icon below to view any of the other three breakout sessions. Have a great day, and thanks again.